Welcome to the Six Again podcast, your new destination for all things NRL. Here to bring you everything from team news to best bets are your hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Mutton. Let's kick off.
Hello and welcome into this episode of Six Again. My name is Adam. My co-host's name is Jared and he'll jump in a second. We're a couple of mates from Sunny Coast, Queensland, Australia, and we're going to talk all things NRL. Coming up on today's show, we have our final two teams that we'll be previewing for the 2021 season in the Canberra Raiders and the Melbourne Storm. We'll also be ranking the jerseys for all 16 teams, home, away and alternate, and also going over the trial results from the weekend. If it's your first time listening or you've been here before, it'd be doing us a solid if you could rate and review us on any of your podcast platforms that allow you to do so. Enough of all that stuff. We've had a pretty big weekend. It's Monday night. We'd usually be recording on Sunday night, but...
Yeah, sorry Jared, about that.
Jared especially, and me later that night. We're a bit under the weather for some reason or another.
Yeah, it's a really good one of our mates' Bucks parties.
Over the weekend?
Yeah, they organised a big boat. I let's say passed out on the beanbag in the front of the boat. And
it wasn't a boat, it was a yacht.
Yacht. Catamaran. And they had a big beanbag in the front. I set myself up there at the start. I wouldn't say passed out, but I was just in like a half sleep daze for about, what do you reckon, an hour and a half?
And yeah. I was it off cooked. Billy Madison, did you fall asleep or did you pass out? Could have been a bit of both. We're all a bit like that. It's the second boat of the weekend. We had a very novel experience by having dinner Friday night from a floating wood fire pizza restaurant. Shout out to Drover's Pizza, who kept us pretty well fed Friday night, driving up to the pontoon. It was all looking well and good till my brother decided to give our mate who was a buck a little nudge while he was, say, taking a leak, and he may have fallen off a certain platform onto a certain chunk of concrete that was hidden under some sand and broke his ankle in two places, I believe, and was off to hospital the first night of his Bucks party. So he wasn't the happiest lad, to say the least. We'll say, but he still kicked on and we tried our best to keep the weekend high spirit. And I think we all still had fun despite the, let's say, slight setback from the first night.
Slight setback. Yeah, righto. Yeah. Oh,
sorry.
Shout out to Adam, the poor bastard. Not this yeah. Adam, the other Adam, whose Bucks party it was. But like Adam said, he soldiered on. Sat on the couch. Everyone served him drinks all weekend. He had a good week.
Had a crack it. Yeah. Been on crutches for the first time. So well done lasting that long before ever needing crutches. And then we packed up. I got home for about an hour and then went off to baseball after spending 2 days already in the sun. And I was cooked. Not as cooked as Jared, but still cooked. And we won 21-5 and actually had a pretty good game. So it was a good weekend.
I left all right. So I left the house. And I drove all the way up to my place, which is about an hour away. And I was fine. I sat down and then I just relaxed and I just fell asleep and didn't wake up for another 9 hours. So yeah,
so I've messaged Jared going, we're ready to go at 8:30. He's like, we might have to make it Monday. The upside is I've still got beers left over.
Oh, Jesus. I can't even look at beer.
Grounded around my esky, and we said last week, Benny Taylor from Nation Brewing looked after us with a smack on keg, and I've still got a few beers. So I'm going to be cracking into their IPA called The Chop, and I'm very much looking forward to it. There's a crack, and we're going to kick off with our news from around the league.
Yeah, so what's been happening? So I'm pretty sure we mentioned it a while ago that Dave Donaghy signed on with the Broncos as their next CEO. And Melbourne want no bar of that. there is speculation that he has a no compete clause, 6 months clause after he quits his current position at Melbourne to not engage in any other professional NRL team. So that's all hitting the courts right now. Dave Donaghy has come out and said he will not release any private and confidential information coming about NRL contracts for players and coaches at the Storm. But if there is a non-compete clause, he has no leg to stand on. Melbourne are completely in the right to stop this. We'll talk about it before the podcast. I'm assuming for this reason, a lot of NRL, well, professional sports teams would have non-compete clauses in their management, in their coaching staff, in their backroom staff, everyone. I don't know how much of it would get informed, because in the NRL, you don't hear about backroom staff. You don't hear about CEOs. You don't hear about office staff or anything like that. All you hear about is player contracts and coaches' contracts. So it's very interesting because, you know, these guys know more about the players than the CEO. They know just as much about what's going on in the inner workings of the club as the players do. And I would imagine, I would imagine actual physio would have one of these in their contracts, just because they know all the slight injuries in each player that's, you know, maintained over a long period of time. It's all really interesting. I never really thought about it till now. So, what's your thoughts on it?
Obviously, if this was in the clause of his contract, he should know about it being the CEO, but who knows how big and detailed those contracts are and how many people read over them beforehand, but you'd assume that he would know. By ceasing contract at the Storm in 31st of Jan, technically it means he shouldn't be taking up a post in any context at another club until the 1st of August. It's known that he's been offered the job at the Broncos and he's accepted that. He was meant to be having, March off before he started in April. And Storm are fighting for that not to occur. Their biggest, obviously, concern is Donaghy, as Jared said, has information about the players, but it's also the future for the Melbourne Storm. There's a key thing in here with regards to Donaghy had access to the club's HR drive, which listed things such as salary cap calculations and a roadmap for the next 4 years, as well as salary cap strategies with regards to player targets up until 2024. So that's obviously key knowledge that could be divulged, even though Mr. Donaghy's been on the record stating that at no point would he or has he or would he ever divulge any of the information from the Melbourne Storm. And he said that any club that I go to needs to beat the Storm on its own merits and he's not going to assist them. That is the word of a man that's out in the open. Words can change behind closed doors. And that's obviously what Storm's concerned about. If it's as much as a clause in a contract, this should be just an open and shut case. Or it could be just an open and shut case. The other side of it is, even if this shuts down, it looks as though Donaghy will be going back against the Storm for finances towards himself not being paid, including a $50,000 bonus, a termination payment, and his $31,500 outstanding from COVID payments that he didn't receive after his salary was docked. How much do you think the CEO of the Melbourne Storm would be on?
Oh, I'd be over $150,000.
Well, damn straight it should be over 150. Bloody hell. You're gonna say higher than that.
No, I'll
say more like 3-4 million.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
He's the lowest paid CEO in the league. Because of their market and TV ratings, whatever it is. It was on a wage of 457,000, which to me is absolute biscuits compared to, for the amount of work. These are the people that hold the club together. They're more important than the players. They're more important than the board and everything. Because they plan for life after players. You're going to have your stars and all this. And Melbourne Storm are going through it now with the last of the big key players in Cameron Smith. Planning strategies have to be put in place long before that, and that's part of the CEO's job. To be on 457,000 is, biscuits compared to what it could be on.
And you know what? It's not like he's a CEO jumping between different clubs. This guy's been the CEO of Broncos for the last 15 years or so.
Storm
for the last 13 to 15 years, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's been
a successful one.
Yeah, well, that's my point. Like, he's one of the most successful CEOs in NRL club history.
Obviously, there's been stuff ups along the way that he...
There was a salary cap, but those people being knocked out of there, I don't think he had any part of that. I think he got installed after all that. I'm not sure. But, yeah, it's a dicey subject.
Let's see where this goes. It's nice seeing, well, it's not nice, but it's interesting watching two of the heavyweights of the NRL go at it, not just on the field, but off the field.
Yeah, and you know what? Even if the court case ends, there's going to be infighting.
This is going to be brilliant.
There's going to be bad feelings. You know, despite the fact he's not the coach, despite the fact he knows what players Melbourne is targeting, and he can just turn around and go, "Oi, see that young fella over there? Our head scout has been looking after him for the last 3 years that no one knows about." Like, stuff like that is... He knows about that, and there's no way, if he had the opportunity for his new club to do that kind of stuff. And even if he doesn't do that kind of stuff, any player or anyone that transfers from Melbourne to Broncos, that's going to be thought of as the main reason behind it. So this isn't going to end anytime soon. So this is huge.
I can't wait to see what it pans out on the field and if there's going to be war of words of coaches leading up to it. I just had a look then. Dave Don, he was media manager at the Storm during the salary cap. So he'd have nothing to do with that. Other news that's come out as well. We've talked enough. We've talked a bit already about the expansion team that looks as though it's going to be in Brisbane. It'll be announced around April, actually. So we're getting closer to it. And the NRL's also released this week the numbers with regards to its financial loss over the last season throughout the COVID pandemic. And in that same statement, they've also mentioned that while there'll be an announcement based around a 17th team, it's a step towards an 18th team. And that will be a key number for the NRL to get to. It'll create an even number of teams again with expansion. And one of the locations that's been thrown around is New Zealand, having a second team, which would be brilliant to have a look at rivalries there. We'll talk about the numbers first. The NRL was...
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, the NRL was one of the... Ben Jarrah was telling me this over the weekend in between beers or after a number, who knows. They announced a loss of $24.7 million. Now, that's a very small figure when you look at the impact that COVID has had on sports
just
around the world.
So you know, Adam's actually looked this up. He's not basing this off the stuff I was telling him on the weekend, because what I told him
was
a completely different number.
Yes. So that's a remarkable figure. Now, when the Telstra Premiership was suspended on the 23rd of March, the deficit would have been just $3.7 million if revenue from November State of Origin was included. And Jared explained that as Origin finished after the calendar season, the revenue from that wasn't even included in this year. And State of Origin alone raised, what was it, $21 million. So if that had been played at its usual time, even without crowds or with smaller crowds, just from the TV revenue alone, the NRL would have only had a loss of $3.7 million through the COVID season, which is absolutely remarkable considering what the game went through. Other aspects of this, $50 million worth of cuts to NRL expenditure when Vlandis came in and started making those decisions. The NRL is in a really strong position moving forward. And Andrew Abdo, the CEO, said the first step is to stabilize the game. Obviously, any loss is a loss. Theirs is a lot smaller than other codes, but it's still a loss. We have to stay vigilant and ensure stability in the game. Start looking at some short, medium, and then long-term initiatives. But they have outlined a number of dot points that range between short to mid to long-term goals in this next phase of the NRL. if Australia continues to stay on top of the COVID pandemic and things get back to normal with regards to a whole season with crowds. So introducing a player transfer window and central contract registration systems are up near the top. Overhauling the rugby league player agent scheme.
Good.
This one I'm interested in.
Don't say it.
This one's the first time. Using technology to improve the game day experience for fans, which would be interesting. I don't know in what way or sense they're talking about that, but it could go heaps of different ways. Creating a network of boutique stadiums across Sydney, sorely needed. Increasing the number of rounds and teams in the NRLW. It's ready for it. Developing the Nines format. Again, I'm interested in that to see how they're going to change things up. Growing participation numbers and expanding the number of NRL teams. I love the fact that we're fans of the NRL right now in rugby league because we've got what seems to be a board who's getting advice from the right people, taking it, applying it to their game, analysing what's working and what's not, and making educated decisions, but in a timely fashion to allow the game to continue to move even through these tough times. It's really encouraging to know that that's happening.
Okay, so I've got a couple things to say about this. One, other coaches in Australia and around the world be looking at these NRL figures going, how the fuck did they do that? Suck shit, rugby union. This podcast is going to be Peter Volandi's supporters page moving forward, because without him, this would not have happened.
No, most likely.
So, like, start of last year when all this stuff was happening, I think I was more vocal in my criticism of NRL starting than Adam was. But full credit to Peter Volandi's that he just stuck to his grounds, and he just got recently reinstated or re-elected as the NRL ARL chairman, I'm pretty sure. And that would have been a unanimous vote. Everyone just would have went, yeah, go for it. Cool. Really happy with that. With the notes that Adams went through, I agree with everything except for the NRL Nines. I'm not the biggest fan of that, just because I see it moving forward as a 2020 kind of thing. So you earn more money for less work, essentially, just like they do with the 2020. Go over the IPL, play, you know, a massive tournament, get paid millions and millions of dollars. A lot more people are focusing on that than the real game, which is test matches. So that's how I kind of see that eventuating, because it's a funner, faster, more exciting game to watch.
Did you just use the word funner?
Funner. So, but it's not as intricate as the 80-minute 13-man aside.
Wow, intricate.
Shut up!
I couldn't disagree with you more.
Really? I hate 2020.
Yeah, I agree with you on the cricket. I just don't think Rugby League Nines is anywhere near close to the equivalent one, because there's only not enough teams that play. It's not on a worldwide enough scale for that sort of stuff too. There's not enough. That sort of money is not there unless a private investor comes in.
I would not be surprised.
It honestly could do, but look at Rugby Sevens, and it's been going for 10, 15 years or whatever. Yeah, they travel around the world, but stadiums aren't packed out. It's not actually that exciting to watch.
Yeah, I just think rugby league's a better sport for it. Like, it's quicker.
It is, but Rugby League Nines, I really, when those games are on, I really couldn't.
Yeah, but you and me, traditionalists.
Less.
We don't like the 2020, so because it's just a waste of time as far as I'm concerned.
We prefer test matches. 2020 compared to the rest of cricket's a massive shift, whereas this is four less players, and also the rules that they're bringing into the NRL are making it much more like.
Yeah, anyway. We'll touch on that later. That's my fear. That's all it is. Okay.
That's all. One thing that jumped out here, NRL held on to 98% of their sponsors through that break from pause of round two before they restarted again later in the year, which is ridiculously, I'd say, a rarity compared to a lot of other comps. We also have to say, obviously NRL earns very little money compared to some of the international sporting competitions. But even then, when you're operating on thinner margins, it's even more important to hold on to the cash that they do have. So
yeah, but pretty strong for Australian sport though.
Oh yeah, for Australian sport, it's killing it. And yeah. I just love the idea that with 18 teams, I've already mentioned looking into two pools worth of teams.
Oh, can we stop that?
18, which comes back to my conference system. Anyway, let's move on to trial games from the weekend. Kicking off with, we're not going to go to a big rundown. We're just going to do a couple of key points from each game before we go into our teams for Canberra and Storm. So first game was Raiders versus Roosters. No real big selection dramas here. Angus Crichton jumped into Boyd Cordner's spot and continued his amazing form. Josh Hodgson made a comeback and looked pretty safe and pretty aggressive, actually, although he did comment how hard it was with the new rule changes to keep up to speed with fitness. And Roosters came back and won that one late. Storm versus Knights, Jared.
Yeah, I watched a bit of this. Some reason we had a Gold Coast supporter where we were, so it just they got chance.
We watched the first half of this game.
Yeah, so
the Warriors Titans game.
Point first. I'm not even going to say that Newcastle missing people because they were. Everyone knows that. I just felt like Newcastle didn't have any. They didn't want to run with any intent. They seemed very get through the motions of their plays. They didn't really have any spark about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's all right. It's a try. Yeah. Just trying to get in, not lose your timing down.
That's right. That so they didn't I didn't feel that from them, but like I said, it is a trial. Melbourne looked clinical as all hell, as always. Jerome Hughes killed it. He was really good. Pappenhausen is more ripped than last year, so they're going to be, again, hard to beat because they just look like they haven't missed a beat. Honestly.
And Dean Arima fighting for a round one spot on the wing, that Melbourne rookie.
Oh.
Although for Newcastle, Dominic Young, the English import, looked pretty good when he came on and scored a try. Big news out of the game, though. Harry Grant picked up a knee injury, which looks like he'll be out till at least round five. All right.
It's not like they could put in an international hooker there to replace him.
What a shame. Titans versus Warriors. This is actually a pretty fun game to watch. Titans getting the points on early, but Warriors were attacking with Gutso. Patrick Herbert looked good for the Titans in his first outing. This was just a really good game to watch if you're a jersey lover like myself, because the whites versus the blue and the yellows looked really cool. Warriors are in trouble with regards to their hooker position. So a couple of people made mention, when teams lose a player who maybe may not be a star player, but a key player. And they brought these three names up. When you actually look back, it's not the big names, but Matt Ballin for the Seagulls, Aaron Payne for the Cowboys, and Mick Ennis for the Bulldogs. How long it took those three teams to get back even up to an average NRL output once they lost the hooker, who was a steady influence over a long period of time. And they've said that Nathan Brown, that's his biggest drama at the moment, is who's that person going to be? Because Wade Egan got injured after he came on to replace Carl Lawton, who was injured. And there's still no news on how long they're both going to be out for, because then Jazz Sevega had to jump into hooker at certain times. So,
to be honest,
that looked really good, but
to be honest, with them, this is going to be hard to say. It's painful for me, but I think, honestly, right now, the best option as hooker is Jazz Tavega.
Nope.
I think he'll... Yeah, no, I don't want him because I think he's a better lock, but I just...
They need to sign someone.
Yeah, but I just think that with the players they've got to play hooker, he's still the best one. Unfortunately, I just...
Oh, that's left.
Yeah, no, that's left or when they're full strength. I think he's still the best hooker they've got. He's also the best lock they've got. But they've got enough people in the middle. Look, their forward pack's epic. They're going to be dropping people.
Yeah, but with a forward pack that big, you need to be getting them onto the ball. Standing there at dummy half and just passing, it's not going
to
be enough.
I think he's good enough to do. I think he's very underrated, the hooker. I really do. I think he can do that. it's just an option that Nathan Brown needs to look into, because like Carl Lawton, Wade Egan, yes, they're pretty silky, but they haven't got that.
They're always injured.
That injured, and they just haven't got that, you know, that flair about it. So they're very.
I don't think Jazz Sevilla has that at all.
I think he's better at running than that. Let's put it that way. I just think he's a better hooker overall. That
all I'd sign Danny Levi until the other guys come back.
You mean that's an insult, right?
No. Sevilla would just be wasted there because he can't do what he's best at, running and tackling.
I know, and it's just kind of like Brandon Smith, but Melbourne have Harry Grant. If Melbourne didn't have Harry Grant, I'd say put Brandon Smith there, but they do.
Yeah, they do. You had Sharks versus Bulldogs. Matt Moylan switched to 5'8". Looked good. It looked good last year before he got injured. Their best backline, or their best halves last year was Sean Johnson with Matt Moylan, I thought, anyway, while Chad Townsend was out. So Matt Moylan was at 5'8". Ofaki Ogden had a really good game for the Bulldogs. He'll be pushing for a starting position. And the obvious stuff, Canterbury's backline is going to take time to develop, and Sharks kept dropping the ball.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, probably the most impressive team on the weekend. Sorry, West Tigers fans. With the South Sydney Rabbitohs. Oh. They put an absolute clinic on over the Dragons. I felt quite justified in Latrell Mitchell's performance, saying that he's going to have no issues playing fullback because he was in absolutely everything. Putting a grubber kick in, doing a double pump.
That double pump was just beautiful.
Oh. It was so good. Cody Walker, I think it was that game. It might have been someone on Twitter or something talking about him being one of the best halves down the blind side in the comp. That was on display. I'm in that camp. He sees things down that side probably more so than he sees on the open side. And they were absolutely clinical to the point where Bennett basically switched his team at halftime.
You know what? The best compliment you can have for them, they were clinical, but they had flair when they needed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they got themselves, they earned the right to play the footy they played. Like I said, that Latrell Mitchell double front, that was just pure instinct.
That backline looked like they've played together for ages, and that first half clinic, they didn't have Josh Mansour in that, and they didn't have Braden Burns in that. It was Jackson Paulo on one wing and Alex Johnson on the other with Campbell Graham and Dane Gagai in the centers. So it just shows the depth that they've got. Jared and I both questioned Josh Kerr on an edge when we saw the teams, and he looked horrible there. Zach Lomax looked pretty solid as always.
Well, Zach Bird looked all right.
As he has done recently, and Jack Bird looked quite good in the centers. I picked him for lock, but his center and 5'8 is where he's played most of his footy in the NRL. St. George, the only other team whose edge defense was as bad as St. George was Manly, and we'll get to that. South really don't need to change a thing. They just keep going. That Dragons team was close to, if not full strength. Penrith versus Parramatta. Penrith's left edge really showed up Parramatta's right edge defense, which is supposed to be one of their strengths. Tom Opacic had a killer game for Parramatta. He'll be pushing for a starting spot. And Penrith literally, like, if your biggest issue is how to balance your bench out going into the season, that's a pretty good problem to have. That's what I was struggling with Melbourne when we picked our teams tonight. This game we didn't see any of. We're just literally going off highlights, which is Broncos versus Cowboys. Frank Molo looking good, looking fit, looking agile. Broncos hooker Jake Turpin looked good. Really good service out of dummy half. That's already a step up from what they had last year. It's hard to get a read on this. On Cowboys, we're still chopping and changing with regards to their starting side, especially in the forwards, and that softens up your defense, and Broncos, to their credit, took advantage of it. And the last game of the weekend was an absolute belting. Tigers over the Seagulls, 52-18, I think the final score was.
It's not a team you should be belted by either.
No. Souths were put out a full strength side to the point where they had players like Zane Musgrove and who were some of the other ones? Michael Cheekham on their reserves. Manly were missing seven first class first team players, but even as a Manly fan, I wanted to see more effort. They looked pretty spent at certain aspects or certain points of the game. The shining light for Manly was Josh Schuster, who had a hand in all their points, and for a big fella showed that he has the hands and poise to run a game. His ball, short ball off to the left, and then his double step while running to the right, one set up a try, one score, and a try shows that he's extremely talented, although he probably won't get a round one start. As Hasler said, there are aspects of his game that he still needs to work on. Tigers look good. All their attack looked really good. They were running downhill for the majority of the game, and they took advantage of it. All right. Whew. Out of the weekend of games, the biggest injury, of course, was Harry Grant's knee injury, looking like 5 weeks on the sideline minimum for him. We're still waiting on scans from Cade Cuss in the Manly game. Suffered a suspected broken thumb. With Manly's hooker stocks already quite low, you'd expect Lachlan Croker to be there for round one.
He got injured.
Lachlan Croker?
Yeah, done his hammy.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
He didn't even play.
No, he done his hammy at training on Friday.
Yeah, Des Hasler said he was fine after the game.
Okay.
But just didn't pick him because it was precautionary, but he'll be fine for round one. Joey Leilua was rested with a minor foot injury, and Tom Flegler pulled up well after a shoulder scare. Wade Egan left the field early, a suspected elbow injury, which we've already talked about, and Kotrick and Dugan both failed to finish their match for ankle injuries, but are expected to be right for round one. No suspensions. Tom Flegler was hit with a grade one charge. If he had unsuccessfully contested the charge, Flegler would have been banned for round one, but he entered a guilty plea. And that was it. Anything else before we get on to our teams here?
No.
I'll sign it. Dean Orima. Melbourne has been upgraded to the 30-man squad for Melbourne. Tom Amone has re-signed for a one-year deal. Sorry, West Tigers have added their forward depth. Ooh. Signing Amone to a one-year deal. That's a good pickup. I read that first as Rabbitohs re-signed him for a year.
Yeah, no, I like it.
Oh, I really like that, yeah. Madden's got a one-year extension at the West Tigers. We're going to have a quick break before we get back with our 2021 season previews for the Raiders and the Storm. Oh.
Hey guys, so this is going to be the Canberra preview. Obviously, they were very strong last year. I think they were very... what do you think about them last year? They came fifth with 14 wins from 20 games and 128 points for against. So, obviously, they made the grand final in 2019. They came into the season with some high hopes. I think that was a bit of a disappointment. Sorry?
Didn't help that Josh Hodgson got injured again.
Yeah. Okay, so a bit of background on Canberra. They were established in 1982. Their captains are Jared Croker with Josh Hodgson. Coach is the famous Canberra Raider himself and Ricky Stewart. They've won three premierships, 89, 1990, and 1994. And they've won one wooden spoon in 1982. Like I said, their coach is Ricky Stewart, who's also got one of the Dally M medals with Canberra in 1993. Laurie Daly and Jack Whiten have also got Dally M medals from that club. They've gained this year. They signed Caleb Akins from Penrith. Ryan James is massive from Gold Coast. Trey Mooney, Harry Rushton, Xavier Savage and Clay Webb have all been upgraded. So the biggest loss they've had this year would be John Bateman. He went to Wigan Warriors.
Went home to Wigan.
Luke Bateman got released. JJ Collins got released. Another big loss is Nick Kotrick from Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs, which we've already been through. Andre Nico released, and Michael Oldfield went to Parramatta. So how do you rate that?
It's the John Bateman loss is huge, and we saw the quality of him even in a short period of time. Ryan James has as
he's good, but he's not the same attributes.
Ryan James at his peak was as good as John Bateman's peak in different ways.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see if James can get back to anything like that. It's going to soften the blow of losing Bateman. Nick Kotrick, again, he's coming into his prime now, so that is a big loss. But also picking up Caleb Aikens, I don't see him playing centers or wing, but having him as a backup fullback is going to help. But I think on the whole balance of things, they've probably lost more than they've gained. But when you're at a team like Canberra, who's had success over the last 3-4 years, you've generally got a pretty good squad anyway, and there's usually less comings and goings. And you'll see the same with the Storm next time round. On their 2020 season, Canberra is generally known for a high scoring team. It was actually last year their defense that allowed them to finish fifth as opposed to their attack. So they had the third best average loss margin of only 9.8 points. However, their winning margin was only 13.4, which was the sixth best out of the top eight. And you usually expect Canberra squads to be scoring quite highly with regards to points, but with Josh Hodgson and John Bateman missing so much time last year, Jordan Rapana playing out of position, Curtis Scott trying to find his feet, there were just too many disruptions really to get continuity throughout the whole season. They would have been expecting higher than fifth. I would have been expecting higher than fifth if I was a Canberra fan, but all things considered, I think they did well to finish where they were, considering also Jared Croker was playing the last, month with a busted shoulder that he got cleaned out in the offseason.
Yeah.
So, upwards and upwards for Canberra in 2021, I think.
Yeah. So, this is a team I've got for them round one. Just as Adam said,
Jared Croker. Yeah. So, you're going through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Jared Croker won't be there, but he will definitely start in the centers when he's back. He's just that. He's their talisman. He's been around for so long. He's also 80% goal kicker. So, he's going to be there. But I've got Charles Nicoll-Klokstad, Bailey Simonson.
Do you want to say Charles Nicoll? Corey Hawira-Naira and Corey Horsburgh most likely won't be there for round one as per Ricky for their DUI.
Yeah. All right. So Charles Nicoll-Klokstad, Bailey Simonson. I've actually got Harley Smith-Shields in the centers. I've actually watched a few highlights of him early. He's pretty good. Curtis Scott, Jordan Rapana, Jack Wyden and George Williams, Dunamis Louis at prop, Josh Papali and Josh Hodgson up front. I've actually got Ryan James on the edge of Elliot Whitehead, Joe Tarpany on the at lock. I've got I forgot his name. What's his name? Tom Starling at 14, sorry. I've got Hudson Young, Emre Gula, and it's kind of open-ended who I'm going to have at on the other bench. It's probably going to be Soliola. To be honest, I think he's the most consistent player they can bring on. He's going to rotate with Dunamis Lily the whole time. So that
was the other player you were thinking of there.
Well, there's a few others. I really like who was his name again? I like Semi Vilemi, and I know he's a winger. But just because of the fact Canberra have been doing that for the last couple of years, they've had a winger on the bench because their forward pack is so, I'm just thinking about Ricky Stewart because their forward pack is so durable and moving positions around. Like, they can play in a lot of positions their entire forward pack. I know John Bateman's versatility is lost, but I know that Ricky Stewart has done that for the last couple of years. He's had an outside back on the bench, and it's actually worked for him too. Like, in a few times, it has worked for him every so often, especially having Bailey Simonson there. So I had a thought about that.
Soliola for you.
Yeah,
we're pretty close. We had 15 of 17. I had Vilemi as a starting winger over Shields. I did consider him, but The other person I considered in the back line was Sebastian Chris, but Villemi having the experience from last year. So I had Villemi and Rapana on the wings with Simonsen and Scott in the centres. And then when Croker comes back, I honestly think it's up to whoever performs better out of Scott or Simonsen who keeps the other centre position.
I think Simonsen's earned his spot.
Yeah, I think, but we haven't seen a lot of him play centre, but I still think he's the better option in the back line. And I had the same bench as you, but I had Ryan Sutton. I think he finished the season really well.
Who'd you drop?
It's Starling, Gula, Young and Sutton. I know Soliola's signed the one-year extension. I know he's going to get game time. I know what he brings. He's one of my favourite players. But I think also if there's an injury, he's the better player to bring in because you know what you're going to get. He's going to be able to fit straight into the starting 13 or onto the bench. There's not going to be any issue. With Sutton having injury, disrupted middle of the season last year, I want him to be starting on the bench rather than coming up from the reserves.
So,
Corey Hawerenara or Corey Horsburgh get a spot for you if they were available?
Horsburgh does. I think they've got too much in the back row for Hawerenara, to be honest.
So you'd be playing Horsburgh as a prop?
Yep.
Because he was playing pretty much a lock last year.
Him and also rotating with Tarpany.
So who would you drop then?
Tom Starling. Probably Gula.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Just because I think that it's a hard, I want to ask, what is the difference for you between Louis and Soliola? Just because if you had both of them at eight.
Not much.
Exactly. So obviously that Dunamis Louis, well, you think a bit higher of him because you don't, they're practically the same player, but there must be a difference. And for me, I can't really pick him, but I know Josh Papali has to play that other proposition. So I just put Dunamis Louis, yeah. But I could have Soliola there as quickly and as confidently.
It's weird. I'd either have one at 10 and one at 18.
Yeah, it's strange, eh?
It's strange because I think Ryan Sutton's just going to start coming into his own a bit more this year. And with the depth that they have at the secondary position, you could even play James at prop if you needed to, depending on how he's come back.
You
still got Corey Hawerenara, Corey Horsburgh. We haven't even mentioned who's the other one on the depth chart here. Neither of us really like him, but there you go, Havili, who's got the NRL experience, but neither of us would pick him in there.
For me, and as you said, Bateman's a massive loss, but the thing that Canberra had to their favour, because they had Bateman, they had such a balanced forward pack in that, you had very strong ball handlers in the second row who could create that extra option. They've got no one in there that has that kind of skill.
Elliot White.
Yeah, no, but another one doesn't have it. Like, that's what they had, so much attack across the park with Bateman. But
see, I think James used to have that, but he was more of a try scoring edge, I guess. But
yeah, see that's what I see against, like, last year with Soliola and Dunamis Louis, they're the exact same player, and you just keep rotating them. But that's what I've got against that this year, because you don't have that second row flash, like second row ball handling, put a chip kick in anymore. So the forward pack doesn't seem as balanced to me.
And that always happens. That's Corey Hawerenara. He can do that.
I know, but I don't think he can. I think the great thing about Bateman and Whitehead is their footy sense. So you didn't have to teach him when to do kind of stuff. But Corey Hawerenara, I think he'd just do it. You go, oh, mate, you need to play like Bateman. He'd just try to do something stupid every single time.
Doesn't have the footy IQ.
Yeah, so which I think that's, look, I know you said it's a massive loss, but I don't think Canberra or the NRL people watching it are ready for how big of a loss Bateman is going to be.
True.
So, yeah, be very interesting.
If we look at Canberra's depth chart, we got Caleb Aitkins, obviously, Adam Cook, Matt Frawley, Sylvia Harvili, Harry Rushton, Harley Smith-Shields for me. For Jared, that'd be Sammy Villemi, Isaiah Soliola or Ryan Sutton, Matt Tomoko, Sam Williams, Albert Hopewadi, and Sebastian Chris. So a mixture of experience, youth, excitement, and covering a range of positions there. My player to watch this year was pretty easy to pick. That's Ryan James. I miss watching him. He was, to me, an elite. He was in the elite category for second row. I think he was very unlucky with not getting picked for New South Wales for a few years there. As a Queensland supporter, I was very happy he wasn't picked because of what he can create and the leadership that he brings. I just want him to get back and to be having fun, injury-free football. Anything above that, anything back to near his peak will be a bonus, but I'm just looking forward to watching him play. He was one of my favourite players. I'm still a little upset he left the Titans, but I can see why he did. I know my younger brother's quite was disappointed, but a similar sort of thing to me. I'm just keen to watch him play again. I'm not expecting too much, but
yeah. So when we did this last year, I actually criticized my player to watch, and I said he won't be able to handle it, and that's George Williams. I think that yes,
that was one of the
minute amount of times I was actually wrong. Thank you very much. So, last year, I think he did struggle at the start of the year, last year. But he really, I think he knuckled down. I think having Ricky Stewart as a coach really helped him, especially his kicking game. Like, Ricky Stewart's shorting game was better than anyone. So, this year, I think another year, another preseason under his belt is only going to increase his ability and chances. And I think he could come close to two halfbacks the entire season. And if he does well, this whole team, because they've got the quality there, they've got the proven quality, and bringing the experience of Ryan James in is just going to enhance them even more. So I think having a halfback like that, you know, playing next to Jack Wyden can only make him better and make the team around him better. So I think he can really shine this year. I really hope he does. Sorry, mate. I know I did criticize you last year. It was deserved at the time, but now it's not.
Thank you. I'll accept your apology.
No, I was apologizing to George Williams. You deserve all the criticism.
I did pick George Williams for a player to watch because he looked awesome. I love the fact that he's a short dude like me. He's got short man syndrome, and he has the ferocious teeth mouth guard to show that he's got mongrel. And he runs the ball slow forwards in the middle. What did Canberra have to do this year to go a step further? To me, they need secondary scoring. And I know that's more of an American term when you're looking at depth players, but they need players outside of Whiten, outside of Papali, outside of Williams to step up and score more often. Canberra won a fair few games last year with Whiten popping off for a double. And we know he's a running 5'8". That's expected of him, but
he can't do everything.
Your Simonson, your Jordan Rapana has to get back and scoring. They need scoring from depth in order to take the burden off their elite players, because they're going to lose them through Origin. And I think Ricky Stewart has to find a way to get scoring more across the board. I literally think that's the only thing they need to do, because their defense was sound last year. They've now got depth at the fullback position if they need it. They got depth in the halves to a point. They just need, scoring across the board. Similar to Manly with regards to their reliance on Trbojevic and Cherry Evans. Similar to, what's another team that missed out on the finals last year? I think Titans are a good example last year where they were getting scoring across the board without any superstar players doing everything. I think Canberra needs to find a balance of that.
I think Canberra need to stop the belief that everyone hates them and everyone's working against them. They have.
That's a Ricky Stewart thing. Yeah. I was like taken aback there, but yeah, Ricky Stewart does that.
And that flows down to the players, and that creates excuses. And you know what? Keeping that attitude for a long period of time is fucking tiring. They've had that attitude since, say, the year before they got in the grand final. And I think if they just focused on what they're doing and didn't worry about what was happening with everyone else. Because out of everyone last year in the NRL during COVID period, Canberra and Ricky Stewart complained the most about how they were being treated. And they didn't even get the rawest end of the deal. They just didn't get to stay in a hotel one night. So I think they need to stop that, because that's just going to clear one thing off their plate and let them play football.
Yeah, I have no idea what it's like to be hated by everybody else. We've only had it since 47.
You can stop fucking whinging as well. Not the 90s anymore, Adam.
Where are they finishing?
4-8.
Yeah. Whoa, okay, top four for me, but yeah. I can see. You're saying 4-8, so they're going to finish fourth, because I've got them 1-4 and you got them 4-8. There you go.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on.
Last team preview, Melbourne Storm.
So this is the easiest one to do, I reckon, because that is so set. So established in 98. Captain, they've got joint captaincy this year for the first time in, 13 to 15 years? With Dale Finucane and Jesse Bromwich. Coach, Craig Bellamy. Four premierships with an asterisk on that. One wooden spoon in 2010, also with an asterisk on that. They have had 3 Del M winners. 2 of them were...
All immortals.
Yeah, they've won 1, 2, 3... They won 5 Del M's with only 3 people winning them. So that's Cameron Smith, Cooper Cronk, and Billy Slater. That just kind of shows you, you know, what Melbourne are. Yeah,
all you need to know.
Yeah, okay, so their gains from this year, and this is one of the... Oh, this is not... How do I put this? So Melbourne aren't known for buying big-name players, but when you see the names they buy, you're like, he's going to be a good player. So Jake Howarth, George Jennings, Jonah Pezet, Remus Smith, and Tagliolupi Tuvalu. I'm really excited to see Remus Smith play under Craig Bellamy this year. I'm stoked. So, losses. Sandor Earl retired. Tino Fasamulawi went to Gold Coast. Ricky Lotelli went to Huddersfield. Paul Momorowski went to Penrith. Albert Vette went to Hull. And Suliasu Vunivalu went to Rugby Union.
Queensland Reds.
There's not too many teams who could lose the caliber of Tino Fasamulawi and Suliasu Vunivalu. This is ridiculous. And still be considered premiership favourites. It is just insane that they can be up there that high. Look, there's not much we can say about their finishing the last year. They're current NRL premiers. So is there anything you want to criticise them about that, or do you think that's deserved?
Not the best team last year. When it mattered, and Penrith were Penrith showed that they were the best team throughout the regular season, but Storm showed what you need to do to win the grand final. That's be the best for that finals period, and they've been there and done that, and they showed that. Cameron Smith was unbelievably good last year, which is more of a shock as why stuff hadn't been sorted out earlier in this offseason. It'll obviously be you can't replace him, but getting as close to filling the void as possible. You can't fault their season last year. Craig Bellamy trained them or coached them to a T. He's back during the season. As you know, he had some seasoned players and people needed rest and balance that perfectly, as he's had practice doing through Origin. Yeah. No real.
Okay. So I reckon this is going to be the one that we are 1-17 agreeing on.
Oh, can we just, before we do the league, can we just cover the coach real quickly? We forgot to do it for Ricky Stewart, but he has a lot lower winning percentage than I expected.
Okay. Okay. Craig Bellamy.
69%. 465 games coach, 323 wins, only 2 draws and only 142 losses. So with no surprise, the highest winning percentage of any coach that is in the NRL that's played a decent number of games.
What you said earlier was 100% correct with the Melbourne know when to win their games. So the losses they probably had were probably like majority of them would have been around origin time and stuff like that. Whereas
not last year.
Sorry?
Origin was after the season.
No. I'm talking about in his overall
win
loss. Melbourne know when to win and when a game can be dropped. I know they don't go out there intentionally to drop it, but like he puts it into them when they need to win a game. And that's where that's the beauty of Craig Bellamy.
A surprising stat from last year for me was their average win margin was 19 points, which is the third most. And Storm aren't usually seen as a team that belts people, but that was a bit of a surprise for me last year when they piled on the points. They really did. Their average loss was fourth best. So shows you all you need to know. Defense is always good, and they just upped their attack last year, which to me came as a little bit of a surprise. But do you want to run your team through first up?
Okay, so I've got Pappenhausen.
Oh, did you do Gaines?
Yeah. So they gained Jack Howarth, George Jennings, Johnny Pizzette.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Okay, so Ryan Pappenhausen, obviously at fullback. Josh Adokar and Remus Smith on the wings. Branko Lee and Justin Olam in the centers. Cam Munster at 5'8", Jerome Hughes at halfback with Jesse Bromwich and Christian Welch starting front row. Brandon Smith at hooker with Harry Grant injured. Felice Kafusi and Kemi Bromwich and Dale Finucane at lock. Nelson Asofa Solomona.
13.
Sorry?
13 for 13.
Nelson Asofa Solomona at 14. Tui Kamikamika at 15. Nico Hines at 16. And Chris Lewis at 17. Any difference?
Two differences, yeah. On the
damn back. It!
I was just having a look. Like, Melbourne picked Nico Hines for the last five or six games on the bench. I think he played, what, three of those games maybe? And even if he did, it was only limited minutes unless it was an injury. I see the point. He is an extremely talented player. That's kind of it for me. I think Melbourne's strengths lie elsewhere. So I mix the bench up because when Harry Grant comes back, Brendan Smith's going to take that 14 position as a utility. So I threw someone on there who I thought's a bit more of a utility. And I still think Melbourne want to see what this guy's got because they signed him to a one-year extension, not a two or a three. So they're still wanting to work out what this player has. So I've thrown Cooper Johns at 14.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I just Max King at 16 because to me, Max King, Chris Lewis, Darren Schoenig, Tom Eisenhuth, whoever. Yeah. If you had Simpson, he's like a little bit above those guys, so I'd put him. My 18th man's Riley Jacks. It was him or Cooper Johns for 14.
But yeah. Either way, they're going to
play 80.
Strong seed. Strong, sorry, team.
Strong seed.
Strong seed. Well, look.
Big Bellamy must have.
What do you think they have to do for next year?
I was just looking at we're going to their depth first. Harry Grant, Riley Jacks, Cooper Johns, Jack Howarth, Lewis, Aaron Penne, Darren Schoenig, Dean Aremia, who could get that starting wing spot over Smith, as could George Jennings, depending on who Bellamy goes with, but money looks as though Remus Smith and Tom Eisenhuth. Obviously, like to me, for them to go back-to-back, I said earlier, they've just got to come as close to filling the void of Cameron Smith as possible. Harry Grant's a better chance of doing that than Brendan Smith because he has a kicking game and has more variety in his attack, as we saw in Origin. And your leaders, like, I don't know if you can really say this, but Felice Kafusi had a bit of a down year for his standards last year. I thought Kenny Bromwich was pretty good. Finucane was out for a bit injured, but your Bromwiches, your Kafusi, your Finucanes have to find that next, not next level, but their top level more often, with Smith not being there, both with leadership and control of the game somehow. And this will be a huge year for Cam Munster. Just with regards to leadership and decision-making throughout the game.
He can't be that cheeky little bastard on Cameron Smith's shoulder anymore.
No. And we talked about the comment that he made to Smith and Smith made back to him in the grand final last year. So, yeah, there's literally not much to say about Melbourne except for filling that void behind Cameron Smith, because Evan Nivali's gone, Remia Smith's here, Josh Adokar will go on the end of this season, they might pick up someone else, Remia might be ready to go. They've also got Lemmy Lemu, that we didn't mention, as an outside back as well. So,
yeah, so
top four, but I'm very not in the top two.
I'm very interested in how he's not a player to watch, but how Kama Kamika plays. So I mentioned it last
back year, surgery, didn't he?
Yeah, I mentioned last year that I love the fact that Melbourne completely overhauled their playing systems and how they played and stuff like that. So, for example, when they're winning all their premierships back in 10, 15, 40 years ago, whatever, they had a team full of Dale Finucane, a forward pack full of Dale Finucane. That's how they played. It's really rough, grinding kind of players. So, yeah. This last premiership they won off Nelson Asofa-Solomona, Tino Fasamalawi, these big guys playing a power game through the middle. And as Adam said, if you actually went back and looked at the average winning margins throughout the last, 15 years they've been dominant, I reckon last year would have come close to the top highest winning margin they had just because their attack was a power game. So Adams has heard a stat and he wants to look it up. So 19 points is massive for how Melbourne used to play. So I think that Cameron Kamika has come into Famasui's spot. And it'll be really interesting how that goes down, is he can emulate what he did, because he definitely has the potential there. So I'm really curious what's that's going to happen. My actual player to watch is this year will be Dale Finucane. Just because I love Dale Finucane. I reckon any team in the NRL will be happy to have Dale Finucane because his leadership, his no-frills attitude. He gets in there, takes the shit runs all, tackles all day, and he doesn't lead from the front through words. He leads through the front with what he does. So he's definitely a great second fiddle to Cam Smith. Now he's captain. It'd be very, very interesting how he, you know, gets that over the line, how he works for that, how he does the job in how he plays, if that's going to change how he plays, or if he's going to step up and really grow into the role, which, like I said the other week, losing Cameron Smith is a loss, but you're like, these two guys are going to step up. And then the like-for-like replacement, Harry Grant's going to do that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting how Dale Finucane steps up to be that captain.
Yes, I didn't go back. I didn't have quite enough time to go back for the last 5 years, but 2017, winning margin 16.2. 2018, winning margin 15.3. 2019, winning margin 17. 2020, winning margin 19. So 2.1 season is...
So that's how they overhauled. They've really started scoring more points. So, look, 15 years ago with the squad...
Their defense has always stayed the same.
Yeah, so with the squad they had 15 years ago, I do imagine that it could have been higher just because they had Greg Inglis, Cooper Cronk, Billy Slater, and Cam Smith. But this year they only had Cameron Smith, and they did play differently the last previous years with the powerful running game, because they never had the full pack the size of Melbourne had last year. Like, they've never had that.
If you go back 16 and 15, 16.3, 15.3. So, yeah, 19 points. It wasn't just us noticing things. It's their best attacking season in the last 6 seasons. So, prediction, I've got them probably, top four, but probably closer to fourth than first this year. Just due to the drop of Cameron Smith.
Okay.
He's got at least 3 spots on the ladder, if not more, even though they've got that much talent around. But it's consistency over the season.
I see minor premiership.
Okay. I'm not going to be Actually, no, I would be surprised, but not as surprised as other results. All right, there we go. There's our 16 teams done in our 2021 season preview. We'll be doing our full ladders, as well as all too early premiership winners, Dally M's, minor premierships, all that sort of award show in a coming show. But now we've done that, the most important ranking of the season is what we're going to finish the show on. And this means almost nothing to Jared, but something I absolutely love. So we're doing it. And in the jerseys for the 16 clubs, we're going to give our top three home jerseys, our top three away jerseys, and our top three alternate slash heritage slash women in league jerseys. If you want to see where our horrible, where my horrible taste comes from, sorry, Jared's horrible taste and my perfect taste comes from, is the Zero Tackle website. You can jump on their news tab and find the 2021 NRL jerseys. So, who are your top three home jerseys for the 2021 season, Jared?
Okay, so I've got Manly.
Do you want to go 3, 2, 1?
All right. Home jerseys.
Third.
Home jerseys. Yeah. I've got Newcastle. I've got Penrith. And I've got Gold Coast.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Newcastle, Penrith, and Gold Coast. You boring as me.
Who you got?
Who do you have again? Penrith, Newcastle, and Gold Coast.
Yeah.
See, I really don't mind the Newcastle home jersey. I don't mind it. I actually prefer your away jersey, but...
No, I don't like the white. I really never liked the white. I love the Newcastle white, blue and red traditional. And that's not biased for me. I just really like the deep colours of it.
So which one did you have number one, Penrith?
No, I thought you got Gold Coast number one. They're my favourite.
Gold Coast number one. I gotta
Yeah, I like how it fades in the top. And yeah, it's definitely my favourite. And it's just got that one gold strip through the middle, which I, yeah.
Simple. So the gradient style. I didn't have any of them in my top three, nor in my honourable mentions.
Okay, who'd you have?
Parramatta at number three.
Jesus.
Which, to say, I love the blue stripes and the yellow bottom there, and the fact that they doubled it up sleeves. Really cool. Number two, and again, I'm going to hate myself for this. I really like the Broncos jersey this year. And you really? Probably know here, I love stripes, but only done in the right spot. And the fact that the stripes are in the middle of the jerseys, a bit of a fade back to their olden jerseys, and that they've replicated at the end of the sleeves. And I do like the little white collar that they've utilized there. I think they did a pretty good job with their home jersey. But the number one best jersey, hands down, is the Warriors. It's brilliant.
Wow. It's a fun,
their olden style. I don't know if anyone saw their jerseys they wore in the trials. It's neither one of their three, but they were prime jerseys. And the Warriors jerseys this year with the green, the red, I guess. Yeah, it's a Vodafone red on the dark blue are going to look absolutely mint. Honourable mentions to Cowboys and Manly, who are both pretty solid jerseys as well.
Yeah, okay. So for the away, I've got Manly. I really like the white, half maroon. And yeah, I really like that. Next one I've got is St. George. So I really like the lines in it and stuff like that. The really bright red. And for the away jersey. Sorry?
Yeah.
And it goes back to my deep color love. And I've always loved the traditional V. I've actually got the away jersey of the Tigers.
Ooh, the black ones. No, the orange ones.
Yeah, the bright orange ones. I really like them.
Yeah, I call them the Rexona jerseys. Look like the tick of the Rexona deodorant bottles. Yeah, they're disgusting. Yeah, no, you go for that. No, actually, I can't say they're disgusting. They're just not my style. But, okay. I agree with your Manly take. I've got them at number two. A flashback again to their olden style jerseys with the split between the maroon and white. I love the fact Manly's home and away are completely different in styling, whereas the home's got the V, the away's got the strips across, and the badge is a lot bigger as well, the seagull badge. I really like that. I had the Roosters at number three. It harps back to the days where I absolutely hated them through the 90s and early 2000s. That's a jersey that I remember Craig Fitzgibbon, Luke Ricketson wearing, team that I hated because they were so good. Brad Fittler, those sort of guys wearing that jersey. It's white. It makes the red and the blue V stand out. It's kind of like a reverse of their home. And then number one, surprise, surprise, Warriors.
Oh, you're boring.
No, their jerseys are so good. So I've got them number one for home and away. So if you're a Warriors fan this year, you should be stoked. All the same reasons as the other one. I think they've just kept it simple, switched out the colours, and it still looks absolutely mint. Honourable mention to the Knights. There you go.
Okay.
I really like their away jersey. I just wish the NIB was slightly smaller.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, so
I want the NIB slightly smaller on your home, but the away.
Okay, so I've actually got the Heritage Dragons jerseys as an honourable mention. I reckon they're awesome. Yeah. And I've also got them different tacks. I have gone through and just picked out the shittest jerseys there are, which is a lot. What?
What was your top three alternates?
Oh, no, I only have one alternate.
You didn't like the rest.
Nah.
Oh my gosh, the best two jerseys are in this category out of everything.
Who you got? I really like the shit ones.
Honorable mention to the Warriors and Manly again.
Oh, Jesus Christ, boy.
But St. George Heritage.
Yeah.
I had it number three. But the two best jerseys out of the whole lot, the Penrith alternate, are just brilliant. That's just Penrith all over for me. It's the Penrith I grew up watching. Absolutely love their alternates, but the best jersey out of everyone that I'll be rocking out is the Canberra Heritage jersey. The whole green with the huge Canberra milk and the blue and yellow on the sleeve, the blue and yellow on the collar. It's just outside of sponsorships, it's the best. It's the best jersey for 2021, hands down.
Okay. So, shittest jerseys. Parramatta away, pull your head in.
It's so bad.
Yeah. Also, Parramatta alternate.
Alternate. Yes. It's so
pull
bad.
Your head in.
How could they have such a nice home and such a bad away?
Oh, it's so bad. Another jersey that I would like to talk about that is absolutely filthy, that takes out the worst jersey of the entire thing, and coming a close second is their home jersey, is Canberra's alternate jersey. What the fuck are you doing?
It looks like a training jersey.
How does it represent Canberra? You guys are green. You've got a strip of green on there.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
And then their home, like Adam mentioned, a really nice lime green for their heritage round. What is going on with their home jersey?
It's pretty bad. It looks like it's been dipped in, it looks like they've had a black jersey or a dark blue jersey, and they just dipped it in green paint.
Someone from Canberra, a fan, I don't know many Canberra fans. They seem to be all stuck down there. But can someone give me some explanation on this alternate? Because it's absolutely
pretty bad. The Heritage jersey of Canberra saves their package. I'd have to say the Sharks are the worst overall with regards to their three. They're just...
Maybe it's
the font of Shark. I like the fact it says Sharks. I really do, rather than a sponsor, but it's got at Karela underneath it. But it's just,
What I do like is actually Cowboys are the only team to release their women's jersey.
I like that the Cowboys home and away are a decent set. Like, I'm not... Yeah.
They're old school. There's nothing flash about them.
They're safe. And same with the Rabbitohs. They're away I'm not a huge fan of, but, There's our jersey breakdown. Jump on the Zero Tackle website. Have a look. See if you agree with us. Put up your jersey rankings. Hit us up through Twitter or Facebook. Throw up your jersey rankings. We might throw up the link to the Zero Tackle website. I'll have time at work tomorrow, I'm sure, to be able to do that at my lunch break or whatever. And we'll put our rankings up there and you can argue with us as much as you want. That'll be us until Wednesday night, Thursday morning. We're going to be doing an X Factor round, looking at who we believe is the X Factor for each club going into 2021 season. And spoiler alert, it's not the people you're thinking about. It will not be a James Tedesco for the Roosters because he no longer has X Factor according to our criteria that we will outline on the program. And we'll fill in with a whole bunch of other stuff as well. Anything else from you, Jared, before we sign off?
Nah, I'm good.
Sweet as. Thanks for joining us for our 2021 season previews, and we'll be back at you in a couple of days. Bye.
See you later.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio. Be sure to check out Adam's craft beer choice of the week.